All right, we're going to begin here on the bottom of Mem Vav Amud Bet. The Gemara here is discussing the difficulty in the Mishnah, which is the Mishnah says that if you have a para and it's vlad that were responsible or possibly responsible for the damage, that you collect the chatzi nezek from the para and then a quarter nezek from the vlad. The problem with that, the Gemara says, is that if you take a quarter plus a half, you end up paying for three quarters of the damage when the only responsibility here should be chatzi nezek. So the Gemara's first answer was that when we talked about a chatzi and a quarter, it wasn't a chatzi of the whole and a quarter of the whole, but rather a chetzi nezek of the half nezek, and it is a quarter of the chatzi nezek. So it's a 50% times 50%, which means that he's responsible for a quarter of the damage. And as far as the vlad is concerned, he's responsible for the 25% of that 50%, which is the equivalent of an eighth. That was the Gemara's first answer as that possibility. Because then he ends up with 3/8, because a quarter of it, or the half of the half, he's certain was done with the damage. The other half, or quarter, is a safek, and so they split it. If you split that, it's an eighth to each side, and so therefore you have an eighth plus a quarter, he gets 3/8, and the eighth is what's the part that is b'safek. Amarava, Rava doesn't like that answer. Atu echad mi'arba'a b'nezek, b'echad mi'shmona b'nezek tani. He says that's not what the Mishnah says. It's a nice reading. It's a nice interpretation of the Mishnah. But our Mishnah doesn't say a quarter and an eighth. The Mishnah says a half and a quarter. It says in the Mishnah, chatzi nezek urvia nezek tani. It's not written a quarter and an eighth. It's written half and a quarter. El Amar Rava de Olam bipara bivlad dechad. Talking about a case where the para and the vlad belong to a single owner. In the previous answer, the assumption was that they belonged to two different owners, and therefore we're talking about the responsibility of each party over there. The Balei HaTosafot discussed why it is that the Vlad and the Para should be responsible each for 50%. It doesn't seem like they're equally responsible for the problem. Even if you think the Vlad was separate, it's still not going to be on the same levels of responsibility as the Para itself. And then Tosafot discusses that question about how you divide up the actual liability. But over here, Rava's suggestion is that it all belongs to one individual. So in terms of liability, that person is liable for everything here. V'hachi kamrinan, ita lepara, if the para is around, it still exists, mishtaleim chatzi nezek mi para, then you pay the chatzi nezek out of the para itself. Leta lepara, if the para is no longer around, mishtaleim revia nezek mi vlad, then you pay a quarter nezek out of the vlad. So the idea being that your first stop or your first collection is going to be from the para. If the para doesn't exist, and then you want to go after the vlad, over there you're going to have to go after the vlad, but there you have a certain amount of uncertainty associated with the vlad. And so because of that uncertainty, you're not going to be able to make a full claim against the party. And that's why you're only going to end up with a quarter and not a half. So this is not a cumulative amount. It's an either or. Either you're going to get half nezek out of the para, or you're going to get a quarter nezek out of the vlad. Now, underlying this, as Rashi points out, is Rava's Shita, which we're going to see in a second, which is the Para and the Vlad are considered to be one entity. And since they are one entity, in terms of collecting from them, each one of them has a certain amount of responsibility that gives you the right to collect from them, even when one of them is missing. So when the Para is missing, you still can go after the Vlad. And if the Vlad obviously is not there, you can go after the Para. In terms of the Vlad itself, you still will not be able to collect the full amount out of the Vlad, because there is still a certain amount of uncertainty as to the Vlad's participation over here. But since it's a single owner, we know in essence he is responsible. It's a question of how much responsibility. If the para is around, there's no question that he's fully responsible and he's going to have to pay for the 50%. If the para is no longer around, there's a question as to whether he has a right to collect out of the Vlad. And that question will leave you in a 50-50 situation in which you'll get a quarter of the nezek and not the full half nezek. The Balei HaTosafot point out over here that this all works according to Shittat Rabbi Yishmael, but it does not work according to Shittat Rabbi Akiva. You remember earlier in the Masechta, when a tam does damage, there's a machloka between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva as to the nizak's rights at that point. Rabbi Akiva believes that you are a joint owner. You become a shutaf in the mazik's animal, the animal that did the damage. On the other hand, Rabbi Yishmael says they're owed the money, and the animal is just collateral. So now the Balei HaTosafot point out over here, if the animal disappears and you're a shutaf in the animal, then we said before that you are equally at loss or at gain in the animal, because you're now a partner in the animal. So if the para got lost, according to Rabbi Akiva, you could say you lost your money. you have nowhere to collect from. For Rabbi Shmuel, where it's only collateral, you could say, listen, the collateral's gone, but you still own the money. And therefore, we'll bring the flat in as the backup collateral or the backup way of making payment. So therefore, Tosfot says that Rova must be according to that sheet of Rabbi Ishmael and not according to Rabbi Akiva, although there is a possibility of explaining it even according to Rabbi Akiva over here, and saying that even according to Rabbi Akiva, since Rova views the para and the vlad as being a single entity, even if the para is lost, the vlad is still on the hook over here because of the fact that you view them as a single entity and you're a partner in both of them. So since you're a partner in both of them, you have a right of collection here, even though the para disappeared. Now the Gemara says, Midayik from this. Taima d'lo yadinan. That's only because we don't know. We have a vlad behada kinakha ilohava. The question or the reason you can only collect a quarter out of the vlad is because we just don't know where the vlad was at the time of the damaging. Was the vlad already born? Or was the vlad still inside of the para? Aval ip shitalan, the hava vlad behada. If we know for certain that the vlad was a part of the para, kinakha mishtalem kule chatzinezek mi vlad. If we knew for certain that the vlad was inside the para at that time, then he has a right to collect the full chatzi nezek from the vlad. Rova the tame, damarova para shezika gova mi vlada. Rova says, if a para damages, then you have a right to collect out of the vlad as well as the para itself. My taima, gufahi, because it's a part and parcel of the para. So Rova's position over here, which leads to his explanation, is that the vlad and the para are not seen as separate entities. They're seen as a single entity over here. Since they're a single entity, it's one big entity. And the question is, we'll go after the para first, and then after the vlad, only because of the fact that we're uncertain about what the vlad's participation was. But if we knew for certain that the vlad was inside the para at the time that the damage happened, then you could go after the para or the vlad equally and collect your 50% out of either of them or both of them. Tarnagolet, shezika, eno gava bebeitzata. What's true about a para and its vlad is not true about a chicken and its egg. A chicken and its egg are considered to be two separate entities. My taima, pirsha ba'almahu, is just like the refuse of the chicken or something that it drops out from it. It's something that's completely separate and segregated from the chicken. Now, the Balei Tosafot discussed that statement of the Gemara over here as to how literally do we take that? How literally do we assume that it's pirsha ba'almahu? Probably the best and easiest way to understand it is that we do have this din by Iser Veheter. The question of whether an egg is considered to be a part and parcel of the animal and it's fleshik, or is the egg separate from the animal and therefore it's pariv, or the impact that an animal that is a trefa has on laying an egg, whether the egg is a trefa, all of these factor into this. So what the easiest way to understand this or to explain is to say that when the egg is inside of the animal and still what's called mi'urab gidin, it's still within the animal and part and parcel of the animal, then we would see it as a single entity, at least for Iser Veheter, and maybe even for Nizakim, depending on which of the Rishonim. But once the egg is already separated away from the mother, not that it has to lay the egg, but even within her, it's already separated away from her, it's not no longer mi'urab gidin, then already it will be considered a separate entity completely, and that's why it's called Pirsha Bialma. Now, if the animal damages with the egg inside of it, and the egg gives it extra heft or extra weight in the damage, here there's a machloket in the Rishonim as to whether the egg can be considered responsible along with the chicken because it gave it more heft in doing the damage. So there are Rishonim who believe there that the egg would be considered as part of the damage because its heft was what gave more power to the chicken or to the animal that was doing the damage. On the other hand, there are others that say that the egg is always considered to be totally separate, and you could never be gova mi beitzata, no matter what the nature of the damage is. Amarova, ein shamim le para bifnei atzma, vele vlad bifnei atzmo, ele shamim le vlad al gabei para. When it comes to assessing the damage over here we're talking about in the reverse situation, not where the para and the vlad are the ones doing the damage, but the other way around, that the sure damage the para with its vlad. In that case, when you're trying to assess the damage that is done, we don't look at the vlad as an independent entity and assign a value to it, as well as the para as an independent entity and assign a value to it. Ela shamin le vlad agav para. We assume that the para was pregnant with the vlad, and we assume or try to assess the value of the vlad in that context. Because if you don't do it that way, if you don't do it that way, then you're actually doing it to the detriment of the mazik over here. The way that Rashi says it is, you're mafsid, because you're causing him a loss because of the nature of the way that people assess value to something. And you'll see in the further examples what that is. Someone cuts off the arm of his friend's Eved Knani. Same thing, if someone damages the field of their friend. In those instances, if you look at the nature of the damage, the particular damage that's there, people will assign a much higher value to the damage itself, looked at on an isolated basis. On the other hand, if you look at it within the context of the totality, people will not assign as high a value or high an expense to that issue. So for instance, if you're talking to a person who's looking at an Eved that is whole, and you're asking him the question, how much money would he accept in order to have this arm taken off? Then the person's going to give you a very large sum of money because he's unwilling to have his Eved ruined just for a small amount of money. People will overestimate the quote-unquote value of the arm in that situation because they're looking at an Eved with an arm on him. On the other hand, if you just assess the value of an Eved without an arm and then the value of an Eved with an arm, the difference between them will be much smaller or will not show that type of differential, because the utility of the Eved exists even without the arm, and with the arm as well. The difference between those utilities or what he would sell for would not be as great as the assumption of the value by itself or independently. The same is true of a field. If you ask somebody, oh, there's a damage in the field, and you ask them to assess the value of the particular area that was damaged, that will be assigned a much higher value than if you just say, I have a field that has this much produce in it or this much planted, and then I have that field minus the area that was damaged. So again, there, in the context of a much larger field, the damage will take on a less significance. Not that that's the reason why we wouldn't do it, but it does mean that when people look at the items independently, they overemphasize the value. So Amar Le Ravacha Brei De Rova, the Ravashi, Ve'idinohu L'chosh Mazik. He says, wait a minute, if that's the din, then what's the big deal? We're not worried about the fact that the Mazik's going to lose out here or lose money here. If that's the proper way to adjudicate the case, then let's do it. Why are you just assuming because it'll cost the Mazik more that that's the wrong way to do it? Now, in terms of the question, and the Balei Tosafot mentioned this as well, the question is probably only on the statement of Rava. The other two positions are positions that we find in a Mishnah. So they're not something that's up for discussion or question because they found in the Mishnah. The only one that is up for question is what Rava says over here, that the Vlad and the Para should be viewed in that way, and you view the Vlad as part of the Para or part of parcel of the Para, and not as separate entities. The reason maybe to differentiate in Rava's case from the other two cases is, but in the other two cases, the items are a part and parcel of the totality that's there. The Eved and his arm are not really entities that you would separate. The portion of the field that was damaged is not usually a place that you would separate from the field itself. On the other hand, when you're talking about a Para and a Vlad, over there, their natural state or their final state is to be separate and not to be together. So over there, maybe Rova is wrong to say that we would assess the value of the Para with a Vlad or being pregnant, rather than just saying we'll assess the separate value of each of the items. And so that's what the challenge is here, is even though if the Mazik's going to lose out, if that's the proper way to do it, why aren't we doing it that way? It says, Dehem Mishom, Damalei Para Me'abarta Aziktach, Para Me'abarta Shaminan Lecha. Because he says to them, listen, I damaged a pregnant cow, I'm going to pay you back the value of a pregnant cow. A pregnant cow's value will not be as much as the value of the Para and the Vlad separately. Partly because there are risks in the birth of this animal, or the chance that the animal will be miscarried along the way, or the animal won't make it to fruition. So there are risks that the Vlad may never be born. So in that context, you pay for a Para that's pregnant, you're going to pay less value of a Para who's pregnant to then a Para and a Vlad who are already existing. And so that's the proper way to assess it, because the damage was done to a pregnant cow, and so you should pay for a pregnant cow. Rova them are going to be born, but that's how the value is assessed. And then when you assign a value to a pregnant cow, you assume on majority it will be born and the baby will be healthy. That doesn't mean that people don't discount that value because there is a chance that it won't happen. It doesn't speak to whether there is or isn't a rova here. It just speaks to how people assess value. Just in general, a pregnant cow is not going to be worth as much as a cow in a vlad. So that's true, one, from the risk standpoint. It's also true from the totality standpoint, which is that a person will, in the context of buying a larger cow and assigning a value to being pregnant, person will give less money than that than versus selling the cow and the Vlad separately. So both of those reasons, it's an overestimation of the damage that was done, because all that was damaged here was a pregnant cow, and he has to repay that same value or make restitution to the value that was damaged. Where it says, Pshita, para dechad, vivlad dechad, in a case where the para belongs to one and the vlad belongs to another, pitma the bala para. The extra weight that the animal puts on will belong to the bala para. So here, in the case of pregnancy, not only is there gained weight because of the vlad, but the para gains weight itself, independent of the vlad. Same as a pregnant woman, when she's carrying a child, the woman gains more weight than simply the extra fetus that she is carrying. She herself gains weight in the process of the pregnancy. So it's over here. But that value, or that extra weight, which would then people would pay more for, clearly belongs to the bala para and has nothing to do with the vlad. Even though maybe the vlad is a goreim or a precipitator of it, but bottom line is the weight belongs to the para, and therefore the owner of the para will get that value. Nafchamai. On the other hand, what about the hef? So people, in addition to the basic price they pay for an animal, they pay a premium for an animal that has extra weight on it, or basically more basar associated with it. And they also pay more for an animal that has more hef, volumetrically, or its size, they will pay more for. So here, when the animal is pregnant, it actually has both of those items. It is both heavier because of the pregnancy, not just the weight of the vlad, but in addition to the weight of the vlad, it's heavier. And then there is a nafcha, there is an expanse to the animal. Because of being pregnant, it is a much bigger animal now. And so people are going to pay a premium for those two items. So as far as the weight premium goes, that goes to the owner of the para. But what about the volume value that is there? Rav Papa Amar, the bala para. Once again, it belongs to the bala para. That excess heft or size that people look at, that belongs to the bala para. Vachabrei the Ravika Amar, chokim. They split it. The hilchata and halacha is that they split it. Because over here, expanse, at least according to one who says chokim, is partly caused by the animal itself, but also partly caused by the vlad. The vlad itself helps to give more volumetric size to the animal. It's not just the para itself that is bigger or wider now. It's clear that the vlad is taking up space and making it look bigger or wider. And so for that reason, you would say that they would split it. According to Rav Papa, who says it all belongs to the bala para, in the end, the person is already assigning a value to the vlad. So now when they're assigning additional value to the heft or the volumetric size of the animal, that's clearly in excess of what the vlad is. And that means it should belong to the bala para, not to the bala vlad. Damage done to a para and its vlad. If, say, it was killed in this situation. Question is, what was the value of this animal? So an animal's value is comprised of different components. There's the basic value of it being a para. There is the value of the vlad that is associated with the para. And then there are premiums that are placed on it for weight and for volume. Those are also values that you would assign. And what the Gemara is saying is, when you assign that additional value of weight and volume, who is the cause or who is the beneficiary of that? As far as weight is concerned, we say it belongs to the bala para. As far as volume is concerned, there, it's uncertain as to whether the vlad is really entitled to at least a portion of it, because he is a contributor to that volumetric view or look of the animal. Or maybe he shouldn't get any of it. It should belong all to the cow. That's the argument of the Amoraim over here. All right, so next Mishnah. Hagadar sheichnis kederutav lechatzer bala bayit shelo birshut. Gadar is a person who is a maker of clay utensils, and he brings in his utensils or his clay earthenware into the chatzer of the bala bayit shelo birshut without permission. Vishavra be'emto shel bala bayit, and the animal of the bala bayit goes in and does damage to the items that are there. Patur. The bala bayit is clearly patur because this person had no permission to place the items there, so why should he be responsible for them? Vim huska bahen, if the animal of the bala bayit is injured by the fact that these earthenware utensils are there, balak terach chayav, then the owner of those utensils that are there is going to be responsible because, again, he put them there without reshut. Vim ichnis b'reshut, on the other hand, if it's brought in with permission, balak chatzer chayav. In that case, then the owner of the chatzer is responsible. Meaning in both ways. He's responsible. If his animal gets damaged by it, it's his problem. And if his animal does damage to the earthenware utensils, he is responsible for the damage that is done by his animal to the earthenware utensils, because he gave permission for this individual to place them there. Hechnis perutav lechatzer balabait. Person brings his fruits to put into the chatzer of the balabait, shelo birshut, again, without permission. Vachaltam bemtosho balabait, and the owner's animal goes ahead and eats them, patur, then the balachatzer, whose animal ate these fruits, is not responsible because the fruits didn't belong there. Vimus kabahen, if the animal is injured by the fruits that are there, bala perot chayav, the owner of the perot, is responsible. Vimichnis birshut, again, if he brought them in with permission, then bala chatzer chayav, then the owner of the chatzer is responsible for all the damage that happens to those fruits. Hechnish aro lechatzer balabait, if he brings the shore into the chatzer of the balabait, shelo bershut, once again without permission, then the din is v'nakcho shoro shel balabait, and then the shore of the balabait goes ahead and gores it, o shenashcho kalbo shel balabait, or the dog of the balabait goes ahead and bites it, patur. The balabait has no responsibility here because he never gave permission for this animal to be inside. Nagahu shorosho balabait. If this animal who's there without rishut goes in and gores the animal of the balabait, then the person who brought his shore in there is chayav because he brought it in without permission. The Rashba over here notes that you shouldn't conclude from the fact that it says nagahu shorosho balabait chayav. It's only chayav because it's shlo birshut. But had it been rishut, he would have been patur. Don't be medayek that way, because over here we're talking about the nezek of Karen. And even if he has permission to be there and it's chatzer shutafin, you're still chayav for the damage your animal does, because Karen is chayav in all circumstances. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot say over here that you can't make such a deal, and that once the individual gives you permission to go in there, that permission extends not only to accepting responsibility that your item is not damaged, but also for acceptance of responsibility for any damage done by your item, including to his own possessions. Nafal libor'o vivish meimav. If the animal went in there and fell into a boar in the balabayit's yard, and then he causes the water to go bad because now there's a carcass laying in the water, chayav, he's responsible for damaging the water, or ruining the water. Hayay viv obno letocho. If the father of the owner of the chatzer, or his son, were inside the cistern of the boar when the animal fell in there, v'shalem et ha-kofer, then the animal pays for the kofer, because the animal didn't belong there, and when he was there without permission, all of this damage came about, and therefore the Baal HaShor is responsible even for the death of these individuals when he falls into the boar. V'im yichnis b'rishut, on the other hand, if he brings it in with permission, Baal HaChatzer Chayav, then the owner of the chatzer is Chayav, because the person had permission to bring it in. Rabbi Omer, Bikulan Enu Chayav, Ad Shikabel Alav, Lishmor. But Rabbi says that's not the case. Even if he gives permission for you to put the animal or to put any of these objects in there, you are not responsible for the damage that happens to that animal until you explicitly accept upon yourself that responsibility. So Gemara will discuss what is the Shoresh HaMachloket here between Rabbi and the Chachamim, but just in the abstract, the machloket revolves around what is the responsibility or the responsibilities assumed by an individual when he gives someone permission to place items in their yard. Does that mean when you give permission, is that permission to bring your items in? And that's it. It ends there. Or is when you give someone permission, you're saying you have permission to place them here. And in placing them there, I'm also taking responsibility for your items. So the Chachamim believe that there's an embedded responsibility when you give someone permission to place an item there. Rabbi believes that if you give someone permission, that's all you've done. Until you explicitly accept the responsibility, then we don't assign that responsibility to you, because all you did was gave permission, but nothing more than that. Now, to your question, the Balei Tosafot asked your question, what do I need three different cases that almost say the same thing or are basically identical? In each case, it gives you three different scenarios. A scenario where without permission, the object is damaged. And then a case where it's put in with permission and the item gets damaged. In all three of the sections of Mishnah, the din's the same in all three sections. The Balei Tosafot note over here, Hanach Tlata Bavei Tzrichei, you need all these three sections in the Mishnah, Below Zu Avzuktani. And it's telling you not only this, but this. Dri Tanak Deirot, had you only had the section about the Deirot, Havamina Birshut Chayav Lufish Nochot Lishaver. The reason that you have responsibility is because we're talking about delicate items. When you give them permission to put delicate items in there, we assume that you're not going to let them get ruined because you know they're delicate items. Therefore, when you give someone permission to put delicate items in there, the assumption is that you're going to take care of those delicate items. About peirot, lo. V'itana peirot, if you only had peirot, shenochot leitkalkel. They're easily get ruined. Not like delicate like glass, but they can easily be ruined from being edible anymore. The animal rolls on them, if they get stuck in the dirt. There are reasons that fruits are a little more fragile or less sturdy than what we'll call an animal. Aval behema, but when it comes to animal, maybe that's not. So the cases are lo zulafzu, not only in the case where it's kederot, or is that the case, but even by peirot. And not only by peirot, but also by ishur. Now, obviously, each one of those is a different level of chidush, but the greatest chidush being that the behema, which is much more sturdy and much more healthy, that you still accept the responsibility in that case, according to the chachamim. So now the Gemara says, taima shelo birshut. The reasoning in our Mishnah is because he didn't have permission to put it there. Har birshut, if it was put in there with permission, lo michayev balak terot b'niske behemto de bala chatzer. Then the person, the balak terot, is not responsible for the damage that happens to the animal that belongs to the bala chatzer. V'lo amrinan ki bule kabio balak terot nidiruta de behemto de bala chatzer. We don't say that the person who places the jugs or earthenware utensils there, that he accepts responsibility for the damage that's done to the animals of the owner of the chatzer. So now, the underlying assumption or premise here in the Gemara, which will continue until the Gemara comes up with a conclusion that dispels this, is that there's this equation of equality over here that says just like the Bala Chatzer accepts responsibility, so too the other party who is bringing his items in would also accept responsibility on himself. So if we say here that he had permission to bring it in, and according to the Chachamim, once you have permission, that means the Bala Chatzer accepted responsibility. So we say that there is, according to the Chachamim, a quid pro quo. Just like the Bala Chatzer accepted responsibility that those items won't be damaged by his possessions, the Bala Terot also accepts a responsibility that the items of the Bala Bait will not be damaged by his possessions that are there. So based on that, the Gemara now wants to make an assumption about the authorship of the Mishnah. Which is now the Gemara says, based on this, if you say it's because it was done without Rishut, that's why all the responsibility lays with the Bala Terot. Habershut, but that's not the case. If he had permission to be there, lo mechayev balak terot beniske behemto de bala chatzer, then the owner of the terot has no responsibilities to the bala chatzer. Velo amrinen kibule kabel balak terot itiruta de behemto de bala chatzer. And we don't say that the person who placed the terot there by default accepted responsibility for any damage that would happen because of his terot. Mani, who's the author of that position? Rabbi he. That's Rabbi Damar ko bistama de lo kabel itiruta. And the default status is that one does not accept upon themselves responsibility for watching. So in this assumption of the Gemara, if it has to be a quid pro quo, and we don't see that the Bala Kederot is responsible over here, that shows you, or that is like the Shita of Rabbi, which says that the default is not to accept responsibility. Ema Seifa, what are you going to do with the next section of the Mishnah? Imich nis b'shut Bala Chatzer. If he does it with permission of the Bala Chatzer, chayav. Then the Bala Chatzer is Chayav. Atan the Rabbanan. That sounds like the Rabbanan, the Amrei Bistama Nami Kibule Kabila Leini Tiruta. That the default status is that the owner accepts responsibility when he gives permission. He's also accepting responsibility for any damage that happens to the item. That's the Shita of the Chachamim. Bitu. And then the last line of the Mishnah is, Rabbi Omer Bekulan Enu Chayav Ad Shitkabel Alav Bala Bayit Lishmor. That you're not Chayav until there's specific acceptance of responsibility. So now you have a structure in the Mishnah, which is Reisha of a Sefer Rabbi. The authorship or the attribution of the Mishnah in the Reisha and in the Sefer is Rabbi. Umitzioto Rabbanan, and the middle section is authored by the Rabbanan. So Amar Rabbi Zera, Tavra, Misha Shanozo, Lo Shanozo. It's an expression we've seen numerous times already in Baba Kama. You have to break the Mishnah, Lishbor et the Mishnah. Whoever learned this section of the Mishnah believes that that's the position of the Chachamim. Whoever learned the other section of the Mishnah believes that this is the position of the Chachamim. And basically we have two Tanaim expressing their opinions in the Mishnah. Rav Amar Kula Rabbanan hi. Rav says, no, the whole Mishnah is based on the sheet of the Rabbanan. Ubirshut shmirat k'terot kibel alei bala chatzer v'afilu nishberu beruach. But what we're saying now is that when he gives permission for the bala k'terot to put it there, he accepts with that permission full responsibility for the k'derot, even if they were broken by the wind. Even if the wind came and caused damage to them, we still say that the Bala Chatzer is responsible. That means that the Baal HaChatzer takes on full responsibility for these items. And when he takes on full responsibility, he alone takes on full responsibility. The Baal HaGderot no longer has any responsibility. Or in essence, what we're saying is this idea of quid pro quo no longer exists. And when the Baal HaChatzer accepts, he accepts full responsibility. Not that he accepts responsibility that he won't damage it, but leaves the Baal HaGderot to deal with the fact that if his items cause damage, that he'll be responsible. No. All the responsibility sits with the Baal HaChatzer in these situations. Alright. That's only true if the animal slips on the peirot. Here, the person brought them in without permission, left his fruits inside of this field that he didn't have permission to put them there. Then the animal trips or slips on those fruits. The Baal HaPeirot is responsible for the damage that's done to the animal. On the other hand, if the animal comes and eats them, he is patur. Now, the patur here is not that the owner of the animal is patur for the damage to the fruits. That we know. That's in the Mishnah. What Rav is adding on is that when the animal eats fruits, and then what happens if the animal fell ill or became sick because it ate too much of those fruits, that you are patur. The Baal HaPeirot is not chayav or responsible in that case. My taima. Havala shalotochal. The animal shouldn't have eaten them. He should have stopped eating. Meaning that the Baal HaPeirot is not responsible for the fact that the animal went ahead and overate in this situation. In terms of Havala Shlo Tochal, the Balei HaTosafot point out over here, Ein Lefaresh, the Lekach Patur, you don't say that. The reason they're Patur over here is the Chashiv Keruach Sheina Mitzuya, that we consider it as if it's unusual behavior. Because the animal shouldn't have eaten them, and when the animal goes ahead and eats them, it's out of the purview of the normal damage that is done. And since that's the case, you're not responsible for it. Tosafot rejects that explanation because of the fact that later on we're going to see that even a Shomer Chinam might be Chayav in this case. And if it was true there was a Ruach Sheina Mitzuya, then the Shomer Chinam should have been Patur. But rather, Elohainu Taima, Kevin Shebimitkavin, Mevi Alav Davar Shemaziko, Einu Ra'oi Zelit Chayav Bekach. Tosafot says that's not the reason that the person or brought the Peirot in there is Patur. It's not because the animal did something that was extraordinary. And since it did something extraordinary, that's not the normal area of his responsibility. And even if he had, quote unquote, permission or he had accepted the responsibility to watch it, he wouldn't be responsible here. But rather, the reasoning is that when an animal does something with intent, where it goes ahead and eats the fruits to the point where it damages itself, it doesn't make sense to make the other party responsible when it's something the animal itself should have stopped or known instinctively not to hurt itself or not to eat too much. So Amar Rav Sheshet, Amina ki naim v'shochiv Rav Amar l'hai shmaitata. When Rav was dozing off or falling asleep, that's when he said something like this, meaning that he said it in his half asleep and he didn't really mean it. Detanyo, hanotein sama mavet lifnei behemat chaviro, person who puts poison before his friend's animal, patur midinei adam v'chayav bidinei shamayim. We cannot bring him to court and we cannot implicate him because of the fact that it's Grom Ab and Ezekin. He did not actively do damage to this animal. He just put poisonous meat out in front of the animal. Then the animal chose to eat it. Now that the animal chose to eat it, he's responsible indirectly for the death of the animal, but not directly. Grom Ab and Ezekin is Patur. Therefore, he's Patur Midin Adam, but he's Chayav Bidinei Shamayim. So Gemara says, Sama Mavetu Dolo Avide Da'achlo. That's only true by the case of poison. Because the animal shouldn't have eaten the poison, or it's not the natural way for the animal to eat the poison. On the other hand, Aval Peirot, David Achlo, B'dinei Adam Nami Michaev. You'd be medayek out of this, that if it's normal items that the animal would have eaten, that you would be chayav, and you would be responsible for whatever happens to the animal, because the animal's instinct is to eat whatever you give it. So if you put fruits there, the animal's going to go ahead and eat them. V'amai. Why is that the case? You could have said the same thing we're saying in our Mishnah according to Rav, which is the animal shouldn't have eaten them, or shouldn't have eaten so many of them. The animal caused the damage to itself. So now the Gemara says, Amrei, hu adin afilu peirot. To say is not just by poison, but also by peirot. Nami patur b'dinei adam is also patur b'dam. V'hakamashman, dafilu sama mavet, nami dlo avidi da'achla chai b'dinei shemayim. But the chiddush here is not the fact that you're patur b'dinei adam. The bigger chiddush is that you're chayav b'dinei shemayim. Even though it's something that the animal normally would not eat, and therefore you could have assumed even if you put the poison there, it wouldn't have eaten it, Nevertheless, you're chayav b'dinei shamayim, and that's the chiddush of the braita. V'ibaydema samamavet nami b'frasta. Then we're talking about poison here. We're talking about afrasta, as Rashi writes this: esev davida lemichle du samamavet. It's the type of vegetation that animals would normally eat, but it's a poisonous item. Dehainu peirei, which is the equivalent or the same thing as peirei. And therefore, the braita that is speaking about not just poison, but speaking about vegetation that the animal normally eats, which is the equivalent of peirei. Whether it's an item that is poisonous, but it's usual for the animal to eat, or whether it's fruits, which it normally eats, and it eats too much. They're all of the same genre now, and therefore this is not a stira to what Rav said. And Tosfot says, the chiddush over here is that, even though this looks exactly like peirot now, the chiddush is the fact that the afrasta results in extreme type of damage, which is since it's poisonous, it ends up in the animal being killed or totally wiped out. And the chiddush there is that even though it ends up with such extreme damage, or the fact that the animal dies, you're still only chayav bidei shamayim and not chayav bidei adam. Alright, meitave. Eisha shenichnasa litchon chitim. Woman goes into mill wheat. Itzel balabait shelo bershut. This person has a mill, which he usually rents out for people to come ahead and mill their grain in order to make it flour. So she goes in and does it without permission. She goes in and mills her stuff. V'chaltam b'emto shel balabait. And the owner of the house, his animal, goes in and eats what she brought in there. Pator, he's not responsible because she doesn't have permission to be there. Imhuska, if the animal is damaged by her wheat or flour that's there, chayevet, she's responsible for that. Amai. Why don't we say that the animal shouldn't have eaten the item? But the Baal Tosafot note that the chiddush by the woman who goes in to mill her grain in the house of the Baal HaBayit, that doesn't sound any different than the cases of our Mishnah. The chiddush here is actually the fact that she's going to pay him for the services. In the end, even though she went in without permission to mill the grain, she is going to pay the Baal HaBayit. So despite the fact that she's going to pay the Baal HaBayit, we still hold her responsible for any damage that happens there because she is in there without permission.
Amrei umi adifa mimatnitin, timukimna shechuklaka behen.
Why is the case here any different than our Mishnah? Why don't you just answer? Like we said in our Mishnah, the damage that was done there was when the animal slipped on the fruits, not when it ate the fruits. So say the same thing here. The damage that's done to the animal is because it slipped or was injured by the flour, not that it ate too much of the flour or the wheat that was there, and that's what caused the damage. I says, Utkarila, Makarila. The answer is so obvious, then what was the questioner thinking in the first place? Why did he even ask the question? He could have answered it the same way we answered our Mishnah. It's talking about a case where the damage has to do with the animal interacting with the object, not eating the object. Our Mishnah says, if it was damaged by them, the Bahan offers you the opportunity to explain it, that it slipped on them. On the other hand, aval hacha, in the bright dog tani imhuska, it just says if it got damaged. It doesn't say imhuska bahen. So velog tani bahen. So it doesn't write the bahen. Achilo diktani. So I would have thought that that was achila. So the havamin, or the questioner's premise, was by the difference in the language, that it would mean that in our Mishnah, possibly you could explain it about slipping. But in the Braita, you would have to explain it about eating because the language is different. It doesn't use the word behen in the Braita. The Kamash Balan is that we don't say that. And we say even in the Braita, it's a case where it damaged itself from coming into contact with it, not from eating it.
V'idach amalacha loshna.
And the other party will say, the answerer will say it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't matter if you say huska behen or huska. In both cases, you can explain that the damage came about from it slipping, not from it eating. And therefore, it won't be a problem for Rav's position.
Tashma, ichnis shoro lechatzer balabayit, shelo birshut.
He brings his animal into the chatzer of the balabayit without permission.
Vachal, chitin, vitriz, vimeit.
When he ate the grain that was there, the wheat that was there, and then vitriz, vimeit. Whether he had a stomach ailment, he had some sort of diarrhea, and dies, pator.
Vim ichnis birshut, if he brought it in with permission, balachatzer chayav.
The balachatzer is responsible for the damage that happened to this animal. Why don't we invoke that principle? He shouldn't have eaten it.
Amarava bishut ashalo bishut karamit.
You're asking a question from a case of permission to a case of without permission. They're totally different.
Bishut shmirat shoro kibelalav.
In the case where he gave him permission to bring him in, then not only did he give him permission, but he all accepted responsibility that the animal won't be damaged.
Vafilu
chanak et etzmo. When he accepts responsibility, it's not simple responsibility, which says that anything that would happen because of the chatzer, or because of what's found in the chatzer, I'm responsible for. But when you accept responsibility, you're accepting full responsibility for whatever happens here, even if the animal chokes, or even if something goes wrong with the animal. Responsibility is not simply that I'm responsible for what happens in the context of my courtyard, meaning that things that are naturally found in my courtyard, but things that are coming from the outside, I would not be responsible for. That's not the case. When you accept responsibility, you accept full responsibility for the animal, even if something happened that's not correlated or connected to the chatzer. And therefore, over here too, when the animal overeats, even though technically it has nothing to do with the chatzer, the animal made a bad judgment call, or its instincts didn't work properly. Nevertheless, the Baal HaChatzer is chayav because he took responsibility to ensure that the animal would be fine and there'd be no damage that happens to the animal, no matter what the source of that damage is. Now the Gemara continues. If he accepts responsibility upon himself, what is the din? Is he accepting responsibility for damage that's sourced from him, or that he is the cause, whether direct or indirect, of the damage? Or that we say that he takes upon himself responsibility even for third-party damage over here. Now, the question, according to the Chachamim, is when you accept responsibility and say, bring it in here, I have no problem, you have permission to put it here. And therefore, according to the Chachamim, by default, you're also responsible for the Shemirah. Or according to Rabbi, where you explicitly say that you're going to be responsible for the Shemirah, that's the nature of the question over here. What does that mean when you're responsible for the Shemirah? Does that mean that you're simply responsible for any damage that's sourced from you, or you are the cause of? Or does that mean you're taking on full responsibility to the point where even if the damage comes from the outside, you're still responsible for it? Now the truth is, Rav already told us what he thinks. Rav told us that even chanakat tzatzmo, even if it choked itself, you're still responsible for it. So the answer is clear that you're fully responsible. So why is the Gemara asking the question over here? It might be that the Gemara is trying to clarify exactly what Rava meant. See, the Gemara here is trying to test the validity of Rava's statement before and trying to see if what he said is correct. Or there's a possibility that you might differentiate between damage that is done to the items inside the Chatzer Balabait when the damage is done not from some outside force being exerted here, but natural things that happen, whether it's a wind that comes and blows it down, or other outside forces that you could have expected to happen here. Maybe that's where Rava says that he accepted for responsibility. But as far as a third party, a shore coming in here and doing damage, maybe there he didn't agree, or maybe that's too far-fetched to assume that he accepted responsibility for that type of damage. And so the nature of the Gemara's question then is, in that situation, what is the din? Tashma. The Tani Rav Yehuda Bar Simon ben Izakin de Beit Karno, that we have a Braita, the Rav Yehuda Bar Simon brings down in the Braitot of Nizikin of Beit Karno, Hichnis Perutav L'Chatzer Balabait Shelo Bishut, brings his fruits in without permission, Ubashur Mimakom Acher, and then a third party's animal comes in, V'Achlan, and eats them, Patur. He's not responsible. V'Hichnis Perushut, and then if he has permission to put them there, Chayav. So Gemara asks the question, Man Patur Uman Chayav. Who is we're speaking about here that is Patur and Chayav? Lav Patur Balachatzer V'Chayav Balachatzer? Isn't what we're thinking here is that the Balachatzer is Patur or the Balachatzer is Chayav? That means that in the case where he brings it in Shulo Bershut V'Achlan and then they were eaten by this third party shore, he is Patur. The Balachatzer is Patur. If the other individual had permission to bring them in there, then he is Chayav. What that shows you, if you read the Braita this way, is that he is taking on responsibility for everything, not just for damage done by him, but even damage done by third-party shore coming into the situation. But those who ask, what does it matter that we make the Baal HaChatzer Chayav Patur? The Baal HaChatzer in the end, if he is Chayav, is going to go after the Baal HaShore because the Baal HaShore came in without permission. So why does it matter that the Baal HaChatzer is Chayav when he has recourse against the Baal HaShore? So the Baal HaTosafot answer, it's a case where he can't get at the Baal HaShore. Either because the Baal HaShore is Aleim, he's way too strong, and you can't extract money from him. Or the Baal HaShore is a party that cannot be made to pay, for instance, a Cheresh Shoteva Katan. So there's no way to get recourse against the Baal HaShore. Or maybe that's exactly what it means here when we say that Baal HaChatzer is Chayav. He's Chayav, and then you have to deal with the Baal HaShore and extract whatever money you can out of the Baal HaShore. not to say that he is chayav, and then he can't go after the Balach Shor. So Amrei lo, that's not the way to read it. Patur Balach Shor, v'chayav Balach Shor. The Patur and Chayav here are the Balach Shor. So what happens here, if you put it in there without permission, you put your fruits into the field without permission, then the Balach Shor, the Shor comes in and eats them, the Balach Shor is Patur. Wait a minute, why is he Patur? The Shor ate fruits where he wasn't supposed to be. The Shor was in the wrong place. The answer is, the Peirot were also in the wrong place. Why does that matter? Because by the din of Shein, we know that you're only Chayav b'chatzer ha-Nizak. You're only Chayav when it's in the courtyard or the possession of the Nizak. So if the Nizak has permission to be there, then we classify it as being a part of the Chatzer HaNizak. On the other hand, if the person that does have permission to be there, then he becomes, in a sense, a partner in the field, or he becomes, the area becomes Chatzer HaNizak, and no longer a Chatzer where it's not his, or it's considered to be Rishut HaRabim. And so that's the difference here. The Balach Shor is Patur in the first case, because the Peirot were there without permission, and therefore it's not Chatzer HaNizak, or classified as Chatzer HaNizak. On the other hand, when the individual has the rights to place those items there, as if they become his area, or the Baal Bayit granted him that area to use, and it becomes, or is deemed to be, Chatzer HaNizak. And therefore, the Balach Shor will be Chayav in that case for what is Amno 8. Where it says, V'i Balach Shor, my Bershut or Shalom Bershut Ika. So then, if it is the Balach Shor, why does it matter if it's permission or not permission? Ika, Amrei, Bershut, Avila, Shein, Bershut HaNizak. If he has permission to be there, it changes it into Shein Bershut HaNizak. The Shein Bershut HaNizak, Chayevet. Shalom Bershut, if it's done without permission, Avila, Shein Bershut HaRabim. The Shein Bershut HaRabim, Miptura. And so that's the nafkamina, or that's the difference here as to whether he has permission or not, is whether it's deemed to be a chatzer HaNizak. As Rashi notes over here, that normally in a chatzer HaShutafin, we said before that it's not deemed to be a chatzer HaNizak. That's only vis-a-vis a damage done by one of the partners to the other partner. But when you come from the outside, a third party that comes in, that's clearly considered to be chatzer HaNizak. So if the two partners have an altercation, or one of the partners sure ate the fruits of the other partner, over there it may not be considered chatzer HaNizak because they have joint ownership or they are partners in the place. On the other hand, that partnership or people being partners doesn't change view for third parties or to the outside. From the outside, for both of them, it's classified as chatzer HaNizak because they have shared ownership. The only question is when between themselves something happens, is it deemed to be chatzer HaNizak or not? But as far as third parties are concerned, it is chatzer HaNizak, and that's what the difference between Bershut and Shalom Bershut is. But once you've done that, we don't have an answer to our question about the level of responsibility the person accepts. Because over here, we're not talking about the Balach Chatzer to understand that he's Chayav in this case, even though it was a third party doing the damage. From there, we would have concluded that he accepts all responsibility. But now that we're not saying that that's the explanation of the Braita, but rather, the explanation is we're talking about the Balach Shor, whether he's Chayav in Patur, that sheds no light on the level of responsibility the person takes when he gives permission for someone to place item in their field, whether it's just permission or he assumes protection against damage from he himself or his possessions, but not from third parties, or does he also accept damage from third parties? Here we tried to bring a proof from this Braita, and we were unsuccessful, and we'll continue tomorrow with the other proofs that the Gemara is going to bring with the next Tashma. So we're going to stop here, four lines down on the top of Memchet Amud Aleph.